In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Hello. I'm Daniel. Now Father Daniel, apparently. So I didn't really know what to say. There's no real kind of guidance about what you speak about on the reception of a church. So forgive me, because I don't really want to talk about what I'm going to talk about. And I probably tried to redo this sermon a couple of times, and every time I tried to do that, it just kept biting me. The message kept biting at me. So forgive me, because this message is not so much for you as it is to myself. It's a preaching not to you, but to myself. It's a sermon to myself. There's a parable that Jesus spoke about that we very rarely notice. And everything I learned in the 40 days at the monastery has to do with this parable. So I'm going to read that parable about, and then I'm going to talk about what the parable's about. And then I'll talk about a couple of things that I've learned that have to do with that parable. So, in Luke 17, verse 5, the apostles say to the Lord, "Increase our faith." And the Lord responds, "If you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, 'Be pulled up by the roots and be planted in the sea,' and it would obey you. And which of you, having a servant plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, 'Come at once and sit down to eat'? But will he not rather say to him, 'Prepare something for my supper, and gird yourself, and serve me till I have eaten and drunk, and afterward you will eat and drink?' Does the master then thank the servant because he has done the things that were commanded him? I think not. So likewise you, when you have done all those things that were commanded, say, 'We are unprofitable servants, we have done what is our duty to do.'" So, it's a very intriguing parable, and it's introduced by a request that the apostles make. They said, "Increase our faith." Jesus' response is two parts. The first statement is he talks about not increasing the faith, but by how you can exercise a little bit of faith and the effect that will have. And then Jesus responds and says, "End." So he has a follow-on, and that follow-on is this parable, which is, if you want to term it something, you could call it the parable of the servant to whom nothing is due. So firstly, Jesus says, it's not about increasing faith. It's about exercising that faith that you already have. So he tells disciples, you have a little bit of faith. I'm not going to add more. I'm going to show you how you can exercise that. So that if you exercise it, that little bit of faith you have, it can be enough to take a tree, uproot it, and then go plant it in the sea. The tree will obey you and do something which is humanly, physically impossible. So the exercising of just a little bit of faith, or talent, or courage, or strength, or love, or whatever you want to put there, requires something, but Jesus doesn't tell us yet. Then Jesus comes to this really odd parable, and he says, "End which of you?" That word, "end," tells us that the parable follows on from what he said. It has something to do with him not increasing the faith, but telling us how we can exercise that faith. And then he gives this parable of a small household, where there's one slave. And he says, "Which of you, having a servant ploughing or tending the sheep?" That word "servant," it's a bit misleading in English. In Greek, it's actually doulos, which means slave. So he's saying, which of you who has a slave, and that slave has been toiling in the fields, he's been working all day, he hasn't eaten, he's starving, he's thirsty, and then as soon as that servant or that slave walks through the door, he hears the words, "Go prepare a meal for me, then after you have finished serving me, then you can go and eat." Notice this is very, very different to what we expect. This is not a man coming home in the olden days, walks through the door, opens the door, his wife is sitting there with a nice smile on her face, and then the wife says to him, "So how was your day?" And then he says, "Yo ole, I feel an act." All right, where's the food? I'm starving, where's the food? Jesus isn't talking about that. He's talking about a slave coming home after working all day, opens the door, and his master says to him, "Go prepare a meal for me. Go prepare a meal for me." So this is something which is a bit challenging for us. And then Jesus says, does the master then look at the servant, who by now has worked all day, has cooked a meal for him, has done everything he can do, is still starving, is still thirsty, does that master then thank that servant? Does he say thank you? Because the slave did what he was commanded to do. The slave did his duty. And Jesus responds, I think not. I think not. Likewise, when you have done all that you were commanded to do, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty to do. So this is an extremely challenging parable. That's why I say it's not to you. This is to myself. And it's a parable that most of us ignore, myself first, to the extent that most of us actually don't know this parable even exists. This poor slave has killed himself all day. He can't even come home to a hearty meal, but instead has to work more and serve his master more. Then after all of that, he can cook for himself. And then the master looks at him and says, "Are you expecting a thank you because you did what you were supposed to have done as a slave? I think not." To make it even more harsh and more stronger, and again I say this is to myself, the word that Jesus uses there, where he says, say we are unprofitable servants, the word unprofitable doesn't actually mean unprofitable. In Greek, it's a word that means not unprofitable, not unworthy, but more like to whom no favor is owed. So when you've done everything that was commanded you, if we can do that, then don't expect the reward, but instead say, we are slaves to whom no favor is owed. We have done what our duty was to do. Now, this sounds harsh, but is it really that harsh? I found this to be actually, and I'm a bit strange, one of the most beautiful teachings that I could find in the Gospels. And for a servant or a priest, I believe it's something that has to be at the core of the priest or the servant. And believe me when I say this, if this is how a priest, if this is how I live, then the kingdom of heaven would be open to us. It really would be. But three things to kind of note about this slave language. Of course, this isn't the only image in the New Testament. The way that God relates to us in the New Testament is often as a father, often as a friend, one who is willing to lay down his life for his friends. So it's not the image of the New Testament. It's not the only way that God relates to us. But it's one of the images. And I find that it balances some of these other softer images. And for me, at least during the 40 days, it was something that really hit home. The second thing is, the result of this faithful behavior without expecting reward is that my little faith can work miracles in my life and the lives of the people around me. So Jesus tells them, I'm not going to increase your faith. I'm going to show you how you can exercise a little bit of faith. That little bit of faith can achieve something which is humanly impossible. And then he gives this parable. So my living like this, obeying God, being obedient in all the commandments without expecting a reward, without any motivation except as a slave is obeying his master, that is how I can work miracles. That is how you can do things which are humanly impossible. That vision of service, working, our duty, not expecting a thank you, no motivation except serving out of love for the master, it empowers, it potentiates, it changes even the little bits that we have. But the opposite is also true. If I have all the faith in the world, if I have all the strength in the world, if I have all the talents in the world, and I don't recognize that I'm a slave of God, I don't recognize that I'm in a relationship to God as somebody who deserves nothing. If I constantly expect rewards and thank yous, etc., then I'll be able to achieve nothing. The third thing this parable reminds us of is that something we can't ignore. We belong to God. We are his slaves. Our duty is to please him. And that's why I say this seems like a very challenging and very sad or very harsh kind of message, but actually it's not. It's actually the most glorious message in the world. We are owned by God. Not some fickle human master that changes his mind every 20 seconds. God, the creator of the universe. And so a lot of people find this slaves language really insulting, but actually it's really beautiful language. For example, St. Paul, the patron of this church, when he introduced himself in the epistles, he says, Paul, a bondservant of the Lord. The actual word that he uses, Paul, a doulos, a slave. The exact same word that Jesus used. So St. Paul introduces himself to the community as a slave of God. It's something like that's his highest boast. That's the best thing he can say about himself. That's the most honorable thing he can say about himself. I'm a slave of God. Even in Philippians, St. Paul tells us that Christ himself became a slave of humanity for the love of humanity. If Christ can become a slave, can't I become a slave? So the honor of the slave is that he completely, absolutely belongs to his master. And that's why I say there's no higher honor than to be God's slave. St. Ambrose, for instance, says that, look, of course by grace we're adopted by God and we become his sons. But by nature, we're slaves. Only by God's grace do we become sons. So that means only when we act like slaves, when we say we are slaves to whom no favor is due, we have done what was our duty, does God then treat us like his children? Does he elevate us to the status of his children? And then even a little bit of faith can achieve what is humanly impossible. So quite quickly, what I learned from these 40 days has everything to do with this parable. Everything to do with this parable. So I'd like to share just three things I learned from this parable in the 40 days. One, when we serve God with no other motivation than out of love for God as a master. That can be the only motivation. We have done our duty purely out of love to the master. No other motivation. Not for a thank you. Not for a reward. No strings attached. No expectations. Can we then imagine a servant or a priest who lives like this? And it's not hard for us to imagine. I saw it growing up my whole life. I saw it every day through every single one of the same Mark's fathers. I saw it through my best friend. I bought a Mark. I saw it through my brother. Where every day you see people that are serving God purely out of love for the Master. No other intentions. No other motivations. People that don't need thank yous. People that don't need anything else to serve except love of God. St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13 that if you serve God out of any other motivation besides the love of God, it's fruitless. It achieves nothing. He says, you can preach, you can build, you can perform miracles, you can give everything. You can give every single thing you have to the poor, everything you own. You can even give your body to be burnt. You can become a martyr. But if it's not done out of love of God alone, then it's useless. It's a clanging cymbal. It's senseless noise. It profits nothing. So we have to remember our motivation. I have to remember my motivation is not reward, but simply to serve God as a master, the creator of the entire universe. The second thing that hit home really clearly for me was we are slaves to whom nothing is due. Everything as a slave points to the master. Can you imagine a slave in the field? The slave in the field doesn't talk about himself, doesn't boast about himself, doesn't dress in nice clothes, doesn't go and build himself anything. Everything he does points to the master. If someone comes and asks him a question, he goes, I have to check with my master. Can you go eat now? I have to check with my master. You know, we saw this in the brothers in the monastery. They treat them like slaves. They really do. And it's training for them. It's training for them. And every question you ask them, I have to check with my master. I have to check with Abuna. I have to check with Abuna. That's how we should be. The glory constantly points to God. So when I've done everything, when I've completed every possible service, when I've fulfilled every possible commandment, then still I am deserving of nothing because my purpose is only to satisfy my master. It's to point towards him and not myself. I received a beautiful book from Abuna Mark that I think Abuna Augustinus is the one that discovered it with some reflections on priesthood. And it was incredibly beautiful. And one of the things in there that it makes a note of is that the word for priest in Latin is pontifex, which means from the word pons, bridge, and fascio, to make. So literally to make bridges. So in Latin, a priest is called to be a person that makes bridges, that builds bridges from God to the people and from the people to God. But the thing I noticed is that bridges, if you think about them, you only notice them from afar. When you see photos, for example, on the internet of the Harbour Bridge, you always see it from afar. You see the beautiful structure, the arches, the structure, the pylons. But no one takes a photo of the Harbour Bridge on the Harbour Bridge. Okay? So bridges only look nice, attractive, important, monumental, a testament to humanity, when you're away from the bridge. But once you actually start to use that bridge, once it becomes functional, once it's doing what it's supposed to do, what it was created for, then you should never notice the bridge. Can you imagine you're driving along a bridge, you're driving along a bridge, and then you look down, you look at the ground, and go, oh, that's some nice asphalt. Oh, it's nice, nice structural columns over there, they've got some nice pylons over there. No one does that. When you're on the bridge, all you do is look forward. You look to your destination, the thing that you're driving to. But what happens if that bridge wants to make itself something hagahela, something nice? It wasn't satisfied to be just a bridge. It wanted people to notice it. It started making these beautiful designs in the middle of the road so that people are constantly crashing into the bridge. People aren't looking forward, they're looking around, and so they're swerving into each other. What happens then? What happens if the bridge doesn't go straight onto a destination, but goes around in circles, never letting you get off that bridge, because the bridge is obsessed with itself? The bridge is not pointing towards the master. The bridge is not pointing towards a destination. It's pointing towards itself. Then people crash. I remember once I was with Father Mark, before we were both priests, and we were trying to drive into the city, and I'll blame him, he'll blame me. We went onto the Anzac Bridge next to Piermont, and we ended up in North Sydney. And we didn't want to go on the bridge in the beginning at all. Then we tried to get off the bridge. As we got off the bridge, because it was so confusing and it loops, we went back onto the bridge. We did this mistake 3 times, and we didn't want to go onto the bridge in the beginning. 3 times we were on the bridge. Of course, it wasn't the bridge's fault, it was our fault. But the funny thing is, the bridge wasn't doing its job. It wasn't delivering us to our destination. It wasn't pointing towards its master. So if there is a bridge or a priest, because the priest is called to become a bridge builder to God, and that bridge prevents its passenger from being focused on the destination, then it's no longer functional. It looks nice, but it's totally useless, if not completely dangerous. So because of that, any slave of God, which a priest is called to become, can't point to himself. He has to point to Christ and Christ alone. I'll tell you a funny story about that. There was a monk by the name of Bona Philemon, different to the Bona Philemon that was here. Let me make that very clear. Different to the Bona Philemon that was here. All right? So his name was Bona Philemon and Meari. He was from St. Macarius Monastery. He was actually a very, very holy monk who was what you can call a holy fool. Somebody that would often act a little bit crazy, but was actually a saint. One day, a famous bishop entered into the church and started to deliver a sermon. Father Philemon then, again, not our Father Philemon, a different Father Philemon, sat down with his head in his knees. And this bishop preached for an hour, extremely intense, hopefully not like what I'm doing right now, but extremely intense. It was a very learned sermon, and it went for an hour. After the sermon, he noticed this monk that had his head in his knees. So he said, "Who are you?" He said, "They call me Philemon, and I am Philemon." And they said, "Were you in the church?" He said, "Yes." He said, "What did you think of the sermon?" He said, "Huh? What sermon?" "I didn't hear any sermon." "Was there a sermon today?" "I didn't hear it." And the bishop looked at him and said, "You stupid monk. Didn't you see me on the pulpit preaching for an hour? Were you asleep?" He said, "No, sir, no, I wasn't asleep." He said, "Oh, forgive me, dearest Siedna. I heard everything you said. I didn't realize it was a sermon. You were just talking about yourself. You were preaching yourself. And any sermon I was taught must preach Christ. I won't tell you what happens next, but the monk, yeah, he took it nicely." So a slave has to preach his master. He has to disappear. His master has to become everything. Like St. John the Baptist, when he came before Christ during the Epiphany, what did he say? He said, "I must decrease and he must increase." He has to disappear. He has to be that bridge builder. He's the bridge that takes the people to God. But that's it. He has to disappear. The third thing I really found to be very true to myself, something that I have to learn and keep always in my mind, is that a slave is not building my kingdom. A slave is building the kingdom, God's kingdom, and not my kingdom. This, I think, is the most important thing any priest or any servant can ever learn. I work for my master and not for myself. I don't have a jurisdiction, I don't have a territory, I don't have a church. I'm a slave to God's one church, to his one kingdom. There can't be competition, there can't be division, because it's not my church or service versus your church or service. It's God's one church and his one kingdom. And we are all slaves of that one kingdom. And it was this day after day, year after year, and I won't embarrass them, consistently, that my confession father, that the St. Mark's fathers, and that Abuna Philemon himself, our Abuna Philemon, taught me very, very strongly. You're not building your own kingdom, you're building God's kingdom. And that means when we serve, we don't serve ourselves. We don't serve our ambition, we don't serve our own kingdoms, we serve God's one kingdom. And that means a slave priest can't be upset with another slave priest because he wants to do something different. A slave priest can't be in competition with another slave priest. A slave priest's duty is to please his master, not please himself. A slave priest's duty is to work without complaint and to expect no thanks because he has simply done his duty. The duty of a slave priest is to work with the only motivation being his serving his master. The duty of a slave priest is to build his master's kingdom, not build his own kingdom. The duty of a slave priest is to serve his master's children, all of you who are before me. So believe me when I say this, this is the most beautiful honor, the most unbelievable thing that God could ever bestow on a human being, to be one of his slaves. It was the honor of St. Paul the Apostle. It was the highest thing he could say about himself. I'm a slave of God. Paul, a slave of God. So again, as I said, this was a sermon to myself, forgive me. And I really find that this parable of Christ is among the most beautiful and joyous of his words. May God give me the strength and the honour of being his slave in Wollongong. May he make me worthy to serve his children as their slave without any motivation except for sharing the work of Christ's one kingdom. I love you all. Thank you for accepting me as your slave priest. Forgive me and beg God to have mercy on me. Thank you.